myself that took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
There's only one place to start, lads, and that is the Laois Offaly Kildare lockdown, whether you like it or not. We're going to start there because this one obviously affects GAA in all three counties. It was Friday morning when people in Laois Offaly Kildare were getting word that we were going to be, you know, our travel restricted and everything that comes along with it. And then the Taoiseach came on later on that evening on the RTE News, and then the GAA didn't waste any time. They issued a statement saying, in response to the updated public health advice, which has been announced specifically for counties Laois, Offaly and Kildare, the GAA and the Camogie Association and the LGFA have announced the cessation of all activity in these counties at all levels in all codes from midnight tonight until further notice. So that was midnight on Friday night. Funnily enough, in Laois, there was teams togged out ready to go on Friday evening, and they were pulled by the Laois County Board. So a friend of mine togged out with the Great Cullen players ready to go, and that was pulled. I don't really know why it was when it came in from midnight that night. It's, again, probably just the GAA being, you know, overly cautious. I don't know. There's people very annoyed in Laois, Kildare and Offaly, especially in Laois, lads, because Laois is the lowest kind of the three counties, Kildare being the worst, Offaly not too much worse off than Laois. The cases in Laois are dropping. All the GAA cancelled. That seems to be the go-to thing. We had Sean Fleming, who's a TD. He's from Laois, from Mount Mellick. He says there's dozens of matches planned in every county involving hundreds of players this weekend, and there's some outbreaks in those areas. I'm involved in GAA myself, and I know players who don't want to go to matches because they're coming home to live with their parents who are vulnerable. I know officials who don't want to attend matches because of the same reason, and we have to take a proactive step on that. And what pissed me off reading that was, why was there nothing from Sean Fleming and from other people in power about the meat factories? It all seemed to be, let's close everybody else down who are trying their best to follow the regulations. The meat factories are not following the regulations. I would have liked to see Sean Fleming saying, we're embarrassed, we're sorry for not heeding the warning signs and for not looking at other countries who had these same issues and for not listening to other TDs and government officials who had flagged this. We're really, really sorry, and now you have to suffer the consequences. That's what I would like Sean Fleming to have tweeted on Friday morning, Colin, instead of the usual, let's get rid of the GAA, let's close that down and let's lock everybody down and you all get punished for our inaction.
You've hit that there, because do you know what you're talking about? That game got called off, was it Friday or whatever, before the midnight deadline? Yeah. It seems like, you know, the GAA are acting sort of, they're preempting things and they don't want to be the ones caught out. Like, you know, they don't want to be the ones who are ruining it for everyone, because we're always talking about personal responsibility and stuff like that. So the GAA are going out of their way to not be that organization or not be the place where it could end up spreading things. Whereas, like, when you actually have a very clear instance of who's to blame here, where this cluster is, it's not just like, yeah, you've ruined it for everyone else. It's like, as you, I think you tweeted about it, it's like, close down the sport. That's the answer. And like, I can imagine the frustration. Like, it is, it's almost like people are joking about building a wall and stuff, and like, it feels that way. Like, I'm just surprised that you haven't started, you know, covering games down in Kerry and stuff just to get yourself out of there.
Yeah, well, there's checkpoints. Like, I mean, they have checkpoints, but I don't think they have any legal entitlement to stop you. They can tell you to turn back, but I'm not sure you have to heed that warning if you don't want to, because it's not in law. I was reading a piece in the Irish Times. Anyway, I don't really want to go down that road anyways, because, like, I mean, who's winning in that scenario, you know? I just think it's absolutely ridiculous. And there's one of these meat factories, Carol's Cuisines, and this is mind-boggling, Connor. This was on the RTE News last night. So that's back open today. The other three meat factories, which have not followed the guidelines, who have not been safe enough, who have put everybody at risk, are closed, and rightly so. The Carol's Cuisine in Tullamore is open today. So what they did was that they tested all their workers, 210 of them, yesterday. and it takes 3 days for the results to come back, and they've sent them all into work this morning. Now, is there anything more idiotic than that? So in 3 days' time, if even one of those tests is positive, that person that was positive has worked with his co-workers 210 for the next 3 days. So that test is a complete and utter waste of time that they went through yesterday. Like, can you even get your head around this? And then you have Sean Fleming on Sarah McInerney's show on RT this morning saying, we would hope that that meat factory would voluntarily close down. Close the bloody thing down.
Yeah, it's I think I saw you tweeting the bully actually about the Carl's factory. That was the first thing I saw about it. So one of a number of alarming things I've seen in relation to meat factories this weekend, to be honest. There was another piece by, I think it was Ella McSweeney, in The Guardian. I don't know if you saw that.
Months ago.
This detailed the conditions that were in meat factories, but this obviously circulated a lot this weekend as well. And like, I have to say, it opened my eyes to it, because I wasn't aware of it and the conditions that are so kind of the huge potential there for the virus to spread. And just reading that kind of made me very alarmed, and very alarmed again at some of the stuff that you mentioned there about the testing and people being able to go to work and the lack of authoritative action, I suppose, from the government, rather than, you know, asking for them to close down as opposed to actually taking the initiative and closing them down. And again, that maybe it's because of the circles that I you know, live in or follow on social media or whatever, but I seem to be nearly seeing as much talk about the GAA on Friday and Saturday in Kildare, Laois and Offaly as I was about the meat clusters, or the clusters in the meat factories. And I was thinking to myself, where are the priorities right? Have they the priorities right and how they're dealing with in those three counties? But again, what can you say? Just, you've kind of hit the nail on the head there about how frustrating it must be for everybody involved. And again, it's sport and the GAA in this context, I suppose, that seems to be the focal point, whereas it probably should be elsewhere.
Well, that's it. Like, I mean, I was tweeting about this on, I think it was Friday, and I was saying like 200 people are allowed at a GAA match. And like, they're very worried about this. And you had Dr. Glynn and all these, they wouldn't raise it up to 500 in massive stadiums, that they were worried about people going together. They were worried about people congregating outside. Yet they allow 300 factory workers work indoors with no ventilation, because the temperature is to be kept at a certain degree so that the food won't, you know, go off. They're allowed work, and these factories haven't been complying with the PPE equipment, all that kind of stuff. And they wouldn't allow GAA. Now, a lot of people came back to me and said, you can't compare a sport, a hobby with, you know, something that's essential like food. And I'm not comparing the two. They're completely different. But I am comparing the authorities and the HSE saying that one is not safe, 200 outdoors, but the other is, you know, the other goes unchecked indoors. I just can't get my head around it. It makes no sense how these meat factories are getting a free pass in all of this. And the obvious answer is the power they hold, you know, with money that they give and things like that. There has to be something. There's no doubt about that. A knock-on effect for St. Lomans is that they played at the weekend and they won 17 points to 1-8. Shandunna they beat. Their selector, Kieran Kilmurry, was the manager for the night, because their manager, Declan Kelly, is from Offaly. The poor man was locked down in Offaly, couldn't even go across into Westmeath to play. Like, whether he would have chanced it or not, I don't know. But like, generally people want to do the right thing, you know, and I think people can pass these checkpoints if they want, but I don't think it's in people's nature to do that. Matches went ahead in Laois on Thursday night, before this all kicked off, and there was a shock. Ballyroan Abbey, that's Ballyroan and Abbeleaks, they beat St. Joseph's with a last minute goal. It was Dermot Whelan's last minute goal. Interestingly, St. Joseph's haven't been going great the last few years, but they have Joe Higgins as their manager, and they have Mick Dempsey, who obviously left the Kilkenny hurling setup. He's in with Joe Higgins, so this is seen as the dream team, management team. So that's a huge setback for St. Joseph's, who are leading most of the way through the second half. But they'll have a second bite at the cherry anyway, so they might not be they need to get back onto the road again. Big win of the weekend is Ken Mayer again, lads. This is like Fergie time for Ken Mayer. They leave it late. Their first three games, they're in a group of death. Dr. Crokes, Terns of Ratley's and Temple Knoll, because that's a local derby. They were out Stephen O'Brien. They beat Dr. Crokes, and I'm looking down through the Dr. Crokes team, Con, and this was them at pretty much full strength. Kenmare Shamrocks came back, and again, that man Sean O'Shea with three late points to win it for them by a point.
And like it was Dan McCarthy scored 1-4 from play, and I think his goal in the second half just really summed it up. Like, you know, Kenmare were just at a different level, I think, for the semi-final. Like, the ball was in the fullback, his favours to catch it, but he's under a lot of pressure from a big, strong full forward. It gets broken down. There's a Crooks player in to win it, and then Dan McCarthy just dives in, flicks it away from him. The keeper is then out to get it, and Dan McCarthy slides in front of the keeper and gets it in. It was just, like, and this is when it mattered most. They won by a point, and it was just somebody who wanted it more that got there. But, like, you talk about Sean O'Shea, and then you talk about a big win at the weekend. I think the big win was Father Bream Park, and that scenic shot as Sean O'Shea is hitting his free, and there's a lake in the background and the sun setting on top of the mountains. Oh, it was fairy tale stuff.
How have we not seen this Kenmare pitch before? It's always been like Kilcar's old pitch. You always see that picture floats up on Twitter every now and then, but we've never seen Kenmare's pitch. It's absolutely picturesque.
And like, do you know if Kenmare go on to win the club championship, like, that should be an immortal photo now with Sean O'Shea just lining that up for 7 minutes of injury time gone. Like, it was beautiful.
Yeah, a big shout out to DJ Brennan, who I was down at his wedding recently, a good friend of mine. He's the Kenmare manager, so I was telling him there'll be a statue for him in Kenmare town if he wins that one, because they play Austin Stacks, and obviously, like I said, Austin Stacks versus Killarney Legion, they beat Killarney Legion. James O'Donoghue was sent off. I said that was a Killarney derby, which was absolutely stupid of me, because I went to college in Tralee and I know right well Austin Stacks is a Tralee club. So it'll be Kenmare versus Austin Stacks in the final of that one. So I'm more interested in the Kerry championship at the moment, Connor, because it's at the semi-final stages, and this is usually the stage we land back into club season after the intercounty ends, the All-Ireland final. You do a week or two kind of post All-Ireland, then you're into county semi-finals and finals. I suppose these group matches don't really capture the national kind of interest, I suppose.
Well, until nowadays, but like, the storylines in Kerry have been so good, and just like at this stage, like, normally this stage in Kerry would be played closer to, you know, obviously after the championship is ended. So at this stage, you're probably keeping an eye on, you know, what are the clubs that might challenge for All-Ireland honours, and obviously whoever comes out of Kerry is top of that list. And just kind of looking, like yourself, I was just looking at the Crokes team and I saw all the familiar names, and I just wonder then, like, is it a case that, like, are they finally on the way, and that these lads have kind of have been carrying the can for so long? Even though I did notice that Yearman, I know we've mentioned him a lot in the podcast, but Tony Brosnan still seemed to be producing the goods with a good few points from play. But this Kenmare, like, the momentum they'll get from having beaten, like, first of all, Temple Knoll in the local derby with the last minute goal, and to beat a side as established as Crokes, like, what it'll do for their confidence going in against against Dax for in the final. So I'm just wondering, you probably know more, Willie, knowing the manager, is Stephen O'Brien going to be back for that, or how are they fixed?
I'm not sure exactly what his injury was. He had an injury going into the Temple Knoll game. So I don't know how serious it is. They're keen to keep these things. I was trying to get Stephen on the show recently, and he said because I'm carrying a knock, I won't come on or whatever. So I'm not sure. I presume it didn't sound too serious that he wouldn't be back for it. So we'll keep our eye out for that one, definitely. Nafina beat Coola in Dublin, lads. And I see this and I just get a shock. Nafina at hurling? What's going on here? And I don't know, just because of all the money that's been pumped into hurling in Dublin, you see teams like Nafina and St. Bridget's, who got to the final, you know, coming out of it. Clubs you associate with football now excelling at hurling. They beat them by 6 points. And this was Coola getting a late goal by Sean Moran from a free, which will surprise absolutely no one. He's brilliant at that. But they were both out of the group. That's the only kind of caveat to this one, Conan. So we don't know, you know, Coola double All-Ireland winners out of the group already, playing Nafina. What was that Coola dressing room like before going out onto the field? Like, did they want to say, let's keep these whippersnappers down, and they were all up for it and we read something into it? Or did they go, look, lads, we're true, you know, we bigger fish to fry, go out and enjoy the game. We just don't know what to make of this. But listen, it's still a huge win for Nafina.
And like, Coola brought David Tracy off as well, which looked like a precautionary thing, which I was thinking they might not do in a game that really mattered. But
yeah,
the only thing I'd say about that is that, like, Nafina were 5 points up at half time. So, you know, if Coola wanted a a rocket up their backsides. That was it. Like, that was going to be the one that was going to get them going, because, like, even if it didn't matter, you don't want to be 5 points down to Nafina, and when you're cooler, you don't want to lose any game. So I thought they'd come out all guns blazing in the second half, but it was Colin Curry and Donal Burke just, like, firing, like, all day in the second half as well for Nafina. And I don't know how much to read into it, but it's a big statement for Nafina. When you go through, like, I was going through their Twitter account looking for clips or whatever, and there's just so many teams there, you know, so many minor games that are taking place, so many junior intermediate matches that are unfolding. Like, you can see, like, with the money being pumped in the Dublin, how a team like this can start springing up and start competing with Coola.
Yeah, they're a huge club now in Nafina, actually. Yeah, they definitely are now that they're a strong dual club. There's some comebacks at the weekend too, lads. So Patrick's Well is the big standout one. This one was on RTE. And, like, I mean, they're 4 points down and the clock is ticking into injury time. They're gone. You know, like, I mean, there's no doubt about it. They score 1-1. Aaron Galan with an absolutely outrageous catch. And one of those brilliant catches that when he came down from the catch, he had almost turned himself in the direction of the goals, and he didn't break a stride and absolutely buried it. And I'm like, Jesus, lads, of all people to watch in the last, I suppose if there were a goal down, they might have watched them closer. But when you're 4 points up, you almost switch off and go, look, they need two scores. They're not going to get that. I don't know what was going through their heads, but it was definitely, geez, of all people to watch it, that last kind of, you know, few minutes, it was Aaron Galan.
Yeah, I was watching it for a little while on Saturday evening, Willie. There didn't seem to, and I just saw the clip back again this morning before we came on, there didn't seem to be a load of bodies back around Aaron Galan when he got the goal. It was fairly just kind of contested the ball. Now, an unbelievable catch, but contested the ball with his marker turned. And it was as nearly as if, you know, when you're running through on goal, somebody tries to tackle you and it has the opposite effect of not stopping you, but giving you more momentum. It was like he got that sort of a boost towards goal and then knocked it home. But I don't know, was there complacency there? I was earlier on in the game, Aaron Galan, he wasn't firing all cylinders. There was one bit in particular, he tried to take a free, was blocked down by the hurl about, you know, just obviously the required distance back, and then had to be taken, or not the required distance back, had to be taken again, and then he put it wide. So he didn't seem to be firing all cylinders until then, the end, and he gets the goal that kind of puts them through. But I know you're not going to see, you know, you're not going to see a goal as good as that. And I'd like to think that if they come up against Aaron Galan again, they won't make the mistake of just leaving them on his own, you know, even though they were 4 points up. And I think it was the clock had ticked to nearly 62 and there was only 3 minutes injury time. So just shows you the danger of kind of play to the finish, as your coaches will always tell you.
Yeah. So Patrick's Well are into the semis. That draw was enough to get them in there. I think Doon now have to wait and see, or they have to play another game, maybe into quarterfinals or something like that. I'm not 100% sure about Doom, but I know Patrick's Well are straight into the semi-finals. St. Eunan's had a big comeback against Kildare. They look, this is a funny game. This was the one on Friday night. Wouldn't have been a classic. 1-9 each. Paddy McBrearty scored 1-4. But like, they were 1-9 to 4 points down in the early stages of the second half. And then Eunan's made a comeback. And let's be honest, Conan, in club football, if you're one in Donegal club football, if you're 1-9 to 4 points down, you're gone. This is why it's such a surprising result, because the way both teams drop players back behind the ball, and it is counter-attacking football in Donegal, let's be honest about it, you have to play that. It's like, if you can't beat them, we'll join them. 1-9 to 4 is almost like a 20-point lead in Laois club football, for example.
1-9 is like hurling scores in Donegal football. Yeah, rarely see a Donegal team, especially a team as experienced. Like, as Kilkar giving away, an 8-point lead? Yeah. Like, you assume, like, once a team is 2 goals ahead, that's it. It's going to be shut out. And even if nobody scores for the rest of the game, that'll happen. But I used to work in Donegal, actually, and St. Eunan's had a habit of doing this. Like, you know, there's a few times where they were sort of hanging onto group stage spots. They were hanging on the quarterfinal spots, and they always just made it through to the semi-final. And there was a whole thing. It was like every team was so wary of them. Like, you don't rule out St. Eunan's. And, you know, Rory Kavanagh was in his prime back then and stuff like that. So he was always sort of the personification of their comebacks. Like, it was almost like he was dragging them up the pitch, and they seem to still have that sort of bit of magic and strength where the momentum just carries them towards goals. And maybe they just have that arrogance as well, where they believe that they're never out of it.
Maybe that's it. I saw some of the highlights of this. Sean Patton made a mistake from a high ball. Maybe that's starting to become a weakness of him. It should have been a goal. It nearly was. Patrick McGettigan's drawing goal to get the really big score of the game. Did you see this? It was from an absolutely impossible angle. I see this, looking at this, I'm saying, like, you wouldn't even think there's a goal on there. He must be a soccer player or something, Conan. Did you see it?
Yeah. Like, it was unbelievable, carry on. But, like, that's, again, like, there's a lot of soccer players in Donegal, so I was maybe assuming that this person, like, he was.
Yeah, no, he must have been. It was just out of absolutely nothing. It's like one of these ones from his wrong side that he just whipped across. You know, maybe even from a type of angle that David Clifford scored against Monaghan that time in that match. That type of an angle, but not off his hands, kind of pulled along it on the ground. Just didn't see a goal kind of there at all. In the Longford Senior Championship, another comeback, Colm Kyll came back from 8 points down to draw 11 points all with Mullnahatta. And we know how good they are, the Leinster champions in 2018. So they were 8 points up and 11 all as well. Looks like it was a cagey game. Colm Kyll are able to come back from 8 points down. It's a little bit incredible as well. The matches on TV, Castlebar and Briefy. This was a good game, Conor, I thought. Like, I mean, a local derby, good game. Looked like there was more than 200 surrounding the field, as far as I would be concerned. They definitely weren't spaced out all that well, but we won't even give out too much about that. It was Rob Henley's too late freeze kind of gave them the insurance points on this. But in fairness, his too late freeze put them four up, and you're thinking, that's it, that's the game secure. And then Castlebar get 2 points, and then James Durkin has an absolutely dreadful miss off his left foot. And it's a miss an inter-county player just simply cannot be, you know, cannot miss like that. And that kind of knocked the wind out of their sails. He ends up getting sent off a couple of minutes later.
Yeah. And, like, to be fair, you mentioned that they went 4 points up there. And, like, I don't think there was any stage during the game. It was really nip and tuck. You know, the most any team was up until that stage was maybe 2 points, maybe 3 points at one stage during the first half. But you mentioned, like, James Durkin had just got a point from play off his right side before that, so you would have thought the confidence was up. But it was a real, he had to get it. And as soon as it was missed, the game was over. And I didn't see what happened. It looks like his whoever was on him niggled at him at the, it was over in the far sideline. I don't know. He just obviously reacted because there was no complaints to the straight red either.
No, like, and there was no replay of it either. We just have to, I don't know, whatever happened over there happened.
That's it. But like Brafey did really well to win that, because I think it was early in the second half. I think Danny Kirby, I think, might have scored 4 points from play from midfield.
He cleaned out Luan, didn't he?
Yeah, and I think it was one stage where after one of those points, I think it could have been early in the second half, and Castlebar really starting to get momentum, and that was their home pitch. You could see the stand in McHale Park in the background. Yeah. That's where Castlebar play their home games. I thought they were really going to carry it through. But you mentioned Matty Ruan there. He got a point. Shamie O'Shea got a point. And Aidan actually went into full forward and got a fist pass the ball over the bar. And I think he got a lovely one at the outside of his left from the 45 as well. So compared to Brafey, they're county lads. Like, Matty Ruan had a tough day against Danny Kirby, but he stood up later on, and the O'Shea's stood up later on and kind of really dragged them home. So, like, that group is fierce interesting now. They're both on, Brafey and Castlebar both on two. Westport and Charlestown drew in the other game, which means that Westport on three, the other two are on, Castlebar Brafey are on two, and Charlestown are on one. So there's, like, it's the final round of games now are in 2 weeks' time. So that's all to play. Like, it's the group of death. It was named the group of death in Mayo, and it's really living up to its reputation. Like, you could, like, not to dismiss Charlestown because they're quite good too, but you could easily pick one of Castlebar, Brafey and Westport as county title winners. So, like,
so whoever, if you say Brafey play
Charlestown,
they play Charlestown, you say Brafey beat them, so they're on four. So then the winners, whoever wins between Castlebar and Westport, will go through. So Westport could find themselves out after a great start.
Yeah, if Westport draw, they're guaranteed to go through.
Yeah.
Because they'll be on 4 points. But Westport drew at the weekend, they beat Brafey by a point. So Castlebar have to go. That's at a neutral venue, actually. The last games are all at a neutral venue. So obviously there's more pressure on Castlebar, but, like, the carrot there for Westport to beat, like, you know, beat their local rivals, knock probably the favourites after Ballintubber to win the county title out of the competition at the group stage, probably the first time Castlebar went out in the group stage and I don't know how long. There's a huge carrot there. And, like, Westport drew at the weekend, but they're building a lot of serious momentum. Like, they've been a coming team for a few years now. So I still think Castlebar will get through. I still think they'll just have enough to do it. But I wouldn't be shocked at all if Westport end up dumping them out.
No, Castlebar, I don't know. Amazingly, they've beaten Cara Finn in Connacht Club finals. I just don't see it in them. I know they had a brilliant win one night. I was watching it on television against Cross McGlen. The year that was in Kingspan Breffni Park, and then they were hammered in the final. I just look at them when I watch them play and going, how are these one of the elite teams in the country? They never really, I don't know what it is about them. They just never, maybe I judge the very top teams off exceptional forwards and they don't seem to have any of them.
Well, you probably judge them off. So if you're looking at the best club teams in the last few years, you're probably looking at when Cara Finn, let's say, or Crokes, when they played well, they played champagne football, really. They'd rack up scores, ridiculous scores. And the one Cara Finn did against Uterard there last weekend. But Cara Finn were doing that against the good teams too. Castlebar, to me, I get that whenever I see them on TV against those teams, it's not anything spectacular they do. But I know from having played against them as well that they're just very well coached. You know, they don't really have any stars, let's say, bar. Paddy Durkin is obviously at the moment. But outside of that, they just have a lot of really good club players that are on the fringes. So I mentioned Danny Kirby earlier, Neil Douglas, for example, Rory Byrne, who'd be the third choice Mayo keeper, Owen Riley at centre back, who did okay and in O'Shea for a while yesterday as well. So just they're really tough to play against, really fit, as I said, normally very well coached. But I think no more than I was saying about Crokes earlier, I would say Mitchells now, or Castlebar Mitchells, are probably their peak was. They beat Crossland again that year, and they beat Croke in the semi-final when Gooch broke his leg that time. Now Gooch did his knee very badly. I'd say that's their peak. So they're probably a little below their peak. And even if they do get out of the group, Willie, to be honest, I can't see them going the whole way. I'd say Ballintubber, Ballina, who I mentioned last week again, who won by 10 points at the weekend, I'd say they're probably ahead of them.
Probably ahead of them, right. Shalmaleers beat Faith Harriers in the hurling before that. This was a convincing enough win. Lee Chin missed a penalty. Lee Chin, funnily enough, was being man-marked by the Shalmaleers centre-forward. Imagine being centre-forward on a team and having to change your role to go back and mark Lee Chin. So, you know, you're not centre-forward anymore. You're actually full-back on Lee Chin. So, listen, he did a pretty good job on him. Obviously, Derek McGrath's influence was all over Faith Harriers. I think they've been avoiding relegation the last few years because Lee Chin was interviewed after the game. Now, he's obviously disappointed losing a championship game, but he was also putting into context, look, we made a quarter final. We were in relegation, you know, last year. So, you know, these kind of teams that they're desperate to win the quarter final, but if they lose it, they wouldn't be as disappointed as the opposition who were expected to go a bit further, Colin.
That Richie Lawler goal was class as well, wasn't it? And I remember Derek McGrath always talking about that space in hurling, you're just vacating it and letting somebody from deep run into it rather than having full forwards coming out with their backs to goal. And Lee Chin throws that little dummy and then just a lovely weighted hand pass. And then Richie Lawler doesn't go full Shane Doyle, but he throws it up and just sort of taps it in over the keeper.
No, I would say he finessed it. He almost tricked the goalie by not hitting it hard.
Yeah, that was it. He just sort of, it bounced twice over the line as well, but he was very confident that it was going in. He reeled away in celebration. And they look like a team, you're playing with no pressure. And they just look like they're enjoying themselves. And as you say, maybe it doesn't matter if they don't go the whole way. It's just this is survive in advance. And at the minute, we're going well.
So the Glyn Barton hammered St. Martin. So that was a big shock in the other quarter final. John Myler is St. Martin's manager, so that's not going to be good for him. And Owlart shocked St. Anne's. St. Anne's were in the final last year. It sounds a bit weird saying Owlart the Bala shocked St. Anne's, but apparently that's kind of the way they are in Wexford at the moment. There was some drama in Wicklow club football, lads. There was a point or no point. So Blessington played Ratneu, and they're a point down after extra time. These games went to extra time. Obviously, there isn't enough room to have replays, and this must be, it's definitely not group stages. It's obviously knockout, maybe, but it's a back door. I'm not too sure their structure. So this was a left-footed free from over on the right-hand side. Very inconclusive, the footage online. Isn't it great that we're getting footage of all this kind of stuff now? You know what I mean? With all the games on the TV, the different club accounts are tweeting out clips and stuff like that. So it's fantastic. I would put this down as inconclusive. David Bootman's free is very hard to know from the angle. And it was one of these ones that goes up very high over the near post. Mm. And it's very hard to know without having a post a bit higher.
I like initially I thought it was definitely over, but he doesn't look too convinced, to be honest.
I thought the same, yeah.
And he's sort of just half-heartedly has his hand in the air while like the Rath New Boys are going mad. Like, you know, they're sure that it's wide, and then when it's not given, when it's given as a wide, he doesn't look too pissed off. Like, whereas if I was sure I scored, I would be like, what the? Like, I don't know what his personality is like, but I know I wouldn't just let that go. He just sort of walked away with his head down, thinking maybe it was. I always, like, when it's inconclusive, I always just look at the player to see what he's doing, and he didn't act well enough anyway.
Now, you know, it is par for the course with a last minute free for the opposition to go mad saying it's wide. With goalkeepers doing that right throughout games, like, I think that's a yellow card offence. It's so annoying on the television. There's no doubt about that. But yeah, that was definitely drama. Portumna, a bit of a headline out of, well, look, it's not that big of a headline now because I think they're not long up out of Senior B, is that they've been relegated. They finished with 13 men again. They got hammered by Castlegar by 421 to 118. Joe Canning got that red card against Sarsfields rescinded, and he played. But definitely Portumna are not the force that they were. And obviously, four-time All-Ireland champions, I'd say it's not easy for them to accept, you know, the situation that they're in. But they're such a small village, I suppose. How do you keep that going at the level that they got it to, you know? So maybe that was just a once-in-a-lifetime generation for them. Sarsfields beat Douglas in Cork. This is another group of debt. So you have Middleton, you have Douglas, and you have Sarsfields, all in the same group. And I saw Sarsfields playing against Middleton, and Middleton will be one of the big teams, Connerly Hands Club, and they beat them. And then I was reading now that four of their six forwards, you have a Hogan, O'Connor, Healy, and Darcy. They were all part of the Sarsfields under 21 team, which won the county title last year. And of the other two, another fella, Alan Myers, was a Cork under 21 in 2018. So the average age of their forward line is something like 21. And their selector, Ray Ryan, says the average age is 21. They have bundles of pace, bundles of talent. I know from my own playing days that you don't want anyone running at you. When players start running at you and use pace and use that directness, it's very hard to defend. There you go. I'm calling it, lads. Keep your eye out for Sarsfields down in Cork. They're definitely somebody to look out for. Interesting enough, Daniel Kearney, wing forward for Cork. I think he was robbed of an All-Star in 2018. He was outstanding that year. He's playing centre half back for them, so there was a little bit of a rejig. Probably not needed in the forward corner with all these young exciting forwards there. So they plonked him in centre back.
Yeah, and I saw he was saying that like he doesn't see it as a million miles away from when he played midfield for Cork. He said he used to hold, and like I was thinking, well, it's probably because I don't watch enough Ireland. But I remember Daniel Kearney is a kind of an all action midfielder. They used to get about the park and used to get a few points and stuff like that. But just going back to the under 21s, it's so exciting, like in a club team, whatever. When you have an underage team that you can build,
it is, yeah.
Do you know, I know in our club, and I know in other clubs like that, like a senior team for years can be built around a certain generation of players. You know what I mean? And like by the sounds of things, if you're bringing four players from the same under 21 team, not just into the team, but into the forward line, that's like 66% of your forward line. And another guy who played under 21 the year before, or 2 years before, that sounds like that's going to be the backbone, providing they all, you know, stick at it. That sounds like it's going to be the backbone of the Sarsfields team for years to come. That's really exciting. And you could be proved right, Woolly. They'll be playing this back in Sarsfields whenever they win a county title in a few years' time.
Big news. Jeez, wouldn't that be great if they did? I'm not sure if that's the big news in Tyrone, Conan, is that Cottle McShane is out. He suffered a setback in his recovery, obviously that ankle injury, and he's out for the championship. Apparently he went for another operation to try and, you know, fix the recurring issue, and he's out for the rest of the year. He tweeted anyways about this in a hospital bed. So we were talking about good and bad news for Tyrone. Matty Donnelly back, but we'll take Cottle McShane off you. So it's a weird one, lads, isn't it? Because with the club going on here now, you wonder even about the appetite for the Intercounty game. It's a weird one, isn't it? It seems like it's so far in the future. It seems like potentially might not even happen. You know, and Cottle McShane being out, I don't know. For me, it's almost like, I don't know how to describe it. It's not the kind of shock that it would have been back as it was earlier in the year when he got injured against Galway that day.
Yeah, like, see, for me, a lot of watching into county football now is, you know, thinking about who can eventually compete with Dublin. And like, that's why I was always sort of rooting behind Tyrone and Donegal, because, you know, they're getting there. And I got excited for Tyrone, especially with the format this year. Like, I know they had to play Donegal, but it was going to be quicker. And I thought, like, you know, Matty Donnelly would be back, but he might not be back so long, where they'd have to play him full forward anyway. You know, they wouldn't be able to play him out the pitch because he just wouldn't have the same engine probably. So I thought him and McShane would definitely be full forward. For some reason, I thought Conor McKenna was going to still be hanging around. So I would really like getting all in behind Tyrone. And the fact that Dublin were going to come out of Leinster and go straight into a semi-final with potentially Tyrone if they had a won Ulster, then I thought, like, this could be the year. Like, you know, this could be the one. If they're ever going to do it, this could be it. And then when you see McShane's gone, it's just immediately, not to write them off completely, but it just sort of flattens your enthusiasm for the neutral teams, you know, that could potentially come up to that level. And I'm sure Donegal will be licking their lips and almost worry a little bit for Mickey Hart, because, you know, he's becoming under more and more pressure every year. And if they go out in the first round this year with no backdoor or anything, you know, I don't know what the feeling will be like in Tyrone.
Yeah, well, look, it's hard to know, but they're definitely in trouble with him being out after everything he scored last year. So, Old Men Part 2, lads, this could be almost a running feature on the show here now. So we have Tommy Freeman at it again. 4 points, 3 from play in a draw against Clontibret, the defending county champions. So, like, I mean, that's an incredible... I know 3 points doesn't sound like a lot, but in cagey games in Monaghan, you know, that's a very impressive performance. He was meant to be outstanding. Ballybay had a big win, and Scotstown had a big win. So Clontibret, one of the top three, were held again. And probably the big standout performance from the Old Men was Colin McFadden. I didn't even realise McFadden was still playing, to be honest. He plays with St. Michael's, and they won 114-14. Again, this is senior inter-county. Colin McFadden must be 40 at this stage. If he's not 40, he's 40 this year. He scored 1-9. 1-4 from play, 4 frees, and 1 from a forward mark. I'd say McFadden looks about 50 at this stage. He looked about 40 10 years ago. So imagine what he looks like still scoring 1-9 now. It's ridiculous shooting.
You're not going to have a hope of the Masters, will you, in a couple of years' time when all these players just start coming in?
Yeah, well, he could play over Donegal, or defending Masters champions. You know, the Masters championship was called off due to the coronavirus. That bloody championship ran for the whole year anyway. It was a ridiculous championship. I'm not messing. It went from the start of April until the end of September. Do you ever hear the bloody like with men over 40, most of them with families, and most of them kind of at the stage where, Jesus, wouldn't a weekend blitz do us? And they're dragging the arse out of it for about 7 months of the year. Like, I lost complete interest in it by the time I went on holidays for the end of it. And I was really interested at the start of it. But yeah, McFadden, he should be next year. He will be underage. Overage for the Donegal Masters, so fair play to him for that.
Yeah, so Colin Parkinson wants a condensed season.
No, yeah, imagine that. Like, I mean, this is it, and you're obsessed with the inter-county season. I actually felt I was going to send through a text and say this season has to be shortened, and I was like, Jesus Christ, relax, stop. You've enough to be on your plate without campaigning for the Master season to be shortened or whatever. But anyways, listen, we'll leave it there, lads. We'll come back with a newspaper review. There's some good stuff in it about the Sean Boylan documentary. Happiness.
I don't really know Jim anymore. Me and him were like best friends when we played, you know. He's seen the light of Jesus, and I'm still like fighting the devil, you know. The dog days are over. The dog days are done. The horses are coming, so you better run. Run fast for your mother, run fast for your father. Run for your children, for your sisters and brothers. Leave all your loving behind.
All right, lads, so we'll start off with the Sunday Independent on the newspaper review. As usual, it's the strongest for GEA. We'll start off with Colm O'Rourke. The headline on this one is "Not So Splendid Isolation Continues." It accompanies a picture of him with his daughter, Elaine, Sinead O'Sullivan, and his wife, Patricia, at the match between Simonstown Gaels and Screen. That was the one on television last weekend. And he says, "It's difficult to see how attendances at matches can have a direct effect on reschools reopening." And to be honest, it's one of his more boring pieces, I would have thought, lads. It's a, I don't know, the kind of writing pieces about the 200 to 500 feels like so long ago. You know, they obviously had decided earlier in the week to write about that, but I just found there was nothing in it that hadn't been done to death kind of at that stage. And very rare that I criticise a piece from Colm O'Rourke, but I thought it was a little bit boring, Conan.
Yeah, and he was sort of agreeing with a lot of how things have been run as well. Like, you know, so normally Colm O'Rourke comes in hot on a Sunday and has a big thing to say, but he was just toeing the line there. I don't think he really had much passion for this column.
For the piece, no.
And like halfway through, he just changes course completely and goes straight to Sean Boylan. Like, you know, so he didn't have a full column in him about what he was talking about initially, and then just went into the Sean Boylan speak.
Yeah, I would say he was on a down week. There was very little material, and he just whacked something out and got it out there, and that was it. And listen, that's allowed. They can't always be brilliant. You're right. He started talking about the Sean Boylan documentary then, and he says there was a similar documentary about Mick O'Dwyer, which showed the admiration he was held in by his players. The affection that he and Boylan shared is not put on, even if they made hard decisions with players, which players were annoyed at and frustrated by. It was a pity a similar documentary was not made about Kevin Heffernan. I completely agree. Can't get enough of these type of documentaries. But to be fair, like, I mean, TG Carter are doing these documentaries for years now, and it's called Laoch Ar Gael, you know. So this isn't anything unusual. This is just RTE with all their footage, can't get up off their arses and do something like this. So, like, I mean, that I think that is it's a sad state of affairs that RT have only done two of these with all the footage that they have and everything that they have and people crying out for them. And it just goes to show, Conor, that TG Cahir are worth their weight in gold.
Yeah, they've shown them the way to go. Yeah, and RT might be calling on you for a contribution like TG Cahir did for Laoch Ar Gael as well, Willie. You never know. But as you said, the main takeaway that I got from the documentary as well was that, actually, funny enough, when you say Kevin Heffernan, Sean Boylan mentions Kevin Heffernan at the very start of the documentary, but the main takeaway was just the, like, I know this is the kind of the purpose of these documentaries, Laoch Ar Gael and kind of the one done on Sean Boylan was, but like the obvious affection that he was held in by anyone who encountered him, and that, like, even reading about him, never mind watching the documentary, that extended to well, kind of beyond the GAA pitch. But it just, you could tell that, like, the relationship that all the players, all the Meath players, and this is going back to early, you know, late 80s, early 90s, that has extended to well beyond whenever they finish their careers. And I'd say that can be rare enough, but that Sean Boylan was just such a kind of gregarious character, and obviously was thought so well of by the people that played under him and anyone that met him, that was always going to be the case. But no, I just thought it was really enjoyable watch, and it's like Colm O'Rourke's views on it, kind of, we probably get to it differed a lot to Tommy Conlon's in the same newspaper, on the same page, in fact.
Yeah, well, I was glad to read Tommy Conlon's one, to be honest with you, because I was disappointed with the documentary. I didn't think it really got into anything. I thought there was a few good parts, you know, about his father. I thought that was good. You know, I don't know, lads. It got into nothing. It just skimmed. There was too many players interviewed. Poor Tommy Dowd sat there for the whole show and spoke one sentence. You know, like, I mean, why did they need to have two players there? They had too many players, if you ask me. Like, it didn't. Like, in fairness, because usually after these, because everybody loves Sean Boylan, and you know, they really like him, the natural thing to do after, oh, wasn't that great? But was it great though? What did you actually get out of it? You know, like, I mean, it was just all nice. And that's why Tommy Conlon writes a very good piece, as far as I'm concerned. And he said that it was the mystery never solved. It came down to one question that fans of the game repeatedly asked during his 23 years in charge of the Royals. How could such a nice man send out such brutish teams? Like, I mean, we've looked at some of their old games in the 80s and that rivalry with Cork, and there was brutality in those games. Now, whether to criticise only Meath, I'm too young to fully understand that era, because, like, they were all at it. There was some terrible tackles going in. But Meath had a very, very fierce reputation, more than any other county at that time. And Tommy says, Calling it simply Sean suggested that this was going to be a cosy, sentimental affair. He was a famous man in those years, and most people who didn't know him referred to him as Boylan. RT should have took the matter, told the maker of the film, Alan Bradley, to change the title, if only to confer some semblance of editorial professionalism on the production. It's completely right. Whoever calls Sean Boylan Sean? Like, it's not, this isn't Mickle. He's Sean Boylan, as far as I'm concerned. I'd never really heard him called Boylan, but he's not one. You don't recognise Sean Boylan by Sean or Boylan, as far as I'm concerned. He's Sean Boylan. But to call it Sean, like, I mean, it was crazy stuff. Oh, yeah, him dreaming of being a Cistercian monk, that was good stuff as well. Like, I mean, but I don't know, Conan. I thought the football stuff and Tommy asking that question about, I think it was David Beggy, the players just touched on it, but Sean Boylan never touched on it, you know, about how they were so dirty, or how did that come from? Did that come from him? Like, I don't think it did come from him, but it would be nice to have had him talk about that.
Yeah, and you would have got something completely new for it as well. Like, I agree. When I read Tommy Collins' piece, I was thinking, like, I know a lot of teams and a lot of managers, like, the managers are very nice and they wouldn't condone any of that stuff, but nor would they discourage it either. Like, you know, they see that the team's winning and they sort of turn a blind eye to it, and I'd say that's more what Sean Boylan was doing. I believe that he wasn't involved in, like, getting them to actively do that stuff. And, like, you're right, I also think it's, like, of its time a little bit as well. Me for probably the big guns, like, and they had that reputation for a reason. But, like, one of the games we watched, remember Colm O'Neill just hit Mick Lyons a belt in the face, and Lyons just walks and doesn't react in any way. And, you know, so I think I told the story of, like, Lyons getting excited because Bernard Flynn turned around and hit him in training. And it was like, you know, Lyons knew that they had to be like that to play football in this era and win football in this era. But, yeah, it would have been nice to have Sean Boylan just talk about it. Like, I went into that documentary knowing he knew exactly what you were going to get. I knew I was going to enjoy it as well. Like, you know, I knew it was going to be a trip down memory lane, a nice man who everyone respects and everyone likes, and a team that everyone, like, you know, recognises, and it was going to be fun to watch, but, like, didn't learn too much out of it. Not to say that every single piece of documentary has to hold somebody up for every single thing, but it would have been nice to ask Sean Boylan that, and like, I'd say he would have had a good, a funny response to how you were playing, and he might have been honest about it as well, that he did turn the blind eye.
Yeah, because that, like, I mean, that is a big, I would be very, very reluctant to call the 1996 and 1999 teams dirty. I don't think they were. There was that semi-final against Tyrone. There was that hit by John McDermott on Peter Canavan, and Tommy Conlon mentions that. I think that's over the top for that team. I think that team played good direct football, but I do think the 87-88 team, like, there was some absolute brutality in their games. Again, though, that was the era at the time. Now, I do think Meath overstepped the mark maybe more than most teams. That's why they got the reputation. But, like, I mean, I don't see anything wrong with Tommy's piece. I think it's a good piece, and I think you need pieces like this coming after documentaries when most of the commentary is, oh, wasn't that great? Not to say, Conor, that your opinion on it, of it being great, is anything wrong with that either.
No, when I say I enjoyed it, Willie, I enjoyed it for the same reason that Conor mentioned there, is in, like, it was a good, it, like, the tributes to, it was obviously it, like, a legend of the GAA, for example. I enjoyed that part of it. Like, in terms of what you mentioned there, so, like, you said David Beggy mentioned it. The only real bit that I saw was Colm O'Rourke say that he doesn't remember once Sean Boylan ever telling, you know, anybody in the dressing room to go out and do this and go out and do that. You know what I mean? But that was kind of the extent of how the Meath's reputation was questioned. There was a couple of clips. That clip that you mentioned, Conan, was shown as well, the clip on Colm O'Neill in Cork. And obviously, one thing you didn't mention about the 96 team was the famous brawl against Mayo, but that was that was initiated by both teams. Do you know what I mean?
That was initiated by Mayo, buddy, not both teams.
Right, okay, fair enough. Well, it ended up with 29 players involved, so whether you can just kind of brush over that from Meade's point of view as well, I don't know. But the one thing on that too is, I'll say that, like, so whether you can say that... what do you can say with whether Sean Boylan was responsible, you know, for, or wasn't responsible, but how much can you disassociate the antics of a team from their manager as well? Do you know what I mean? So, like, Sean Boylan mightn't have been telling people in the dressing room, you know, that, like, to go out and do this and to go out and do that. But I, like, that doesn't mean, to me anyway, if his team does it, that doesn't mean that he's completely, you know, free of criticism for it either. And I think Tommy Conlon was dead right to ask that question, especially because when you think of those Meath teams, rightly or wrongly, as you said, they're not the only team at it, but there's definitely
people do think of their physicality and at times brutality, I suppose. So to think that it only merited maybe a couple of minutes of very light discussion in a documentary about Sean Boylan was, I think Tommy Conlon was right to raise it. The only thing he did say was that he suggested maybe that a new Galway team won the All-Ireland in 1998, nearly suggesting that, you know, the game had to move on and Galway moved it on. And then, but Meath under Sean Boylan won the All-Ireland the following year. So they were well able to adapt as well. And I think you're right in that Meath team were a bit different from the Meath team that went before as well.
Yeah. Look, there's no doubt that he went in hard on Meath. Like, he said things like Meath were demeaning the game. They were dragging it through the mud. You know, like, that's a bit over the top. You know, like, I mean, but at the same time, like, I mean, Joe Brawley has a big issue with this piece. We know that him and Tommy Conlon aren't exactly bosom buddies over a piece Tommy wrote before. But at the same time, like, I mean, is there any difference in this than what Joe says about Mayo? And he's no problem saying that. Like, you know, in fairness to Tommy, he said about the Meath players, funnily enough, when you meet the players in person, in general, they couldn't be sounder. By and large, they were affable, yeah, humble, likeable lads. Like, he's not completely doing a hatchet job on them personally. He's calling, and I've heard Colm O'Rourke admitting that these lads would take your life on the pitch. Sure, like, I mean, Joe Brawley and these lads tell yarns about Bernard Flynn turning around and breaking a lad's nose, and Bernard Flynn tells this story as well, and it's all funny. Isn't it amazing that your own era, acts of brutality like that, Conan, are hilarious. Yet if they happen in an era that you're not involved in, it's absolutely brutal. You know, these lads, if that was on the street, these lads would be arrested.
Yeah, and that's part of the magic of Joe Brawley as well, isn't it? Like, I always remember Enda Gormley speaking really well about Joe Brawley and Joe Brawley's sort of his golden age thinking, I suppose. Like, he's always like talking back about the old eras. Like, and Joe Brawley would write a funny piece, you know, quicker than anybody else, about how Ballanderry once beat the shit out of Dungiven down in Ballanderry's pitch. And, you know, thought this was amazing that people were going off in ambulances and stuff. But, and like Gormley was talking about, like, you know, anybody who thinks football was better back then when we were all coming off of broken jaws needs to get their head out of the clouds. Like, you know, and it was actually very interesting listening and talking about that. But, like, I think, again, like, this is why I actually think it would have been fairer for Sean Boylan to have been asked, because a piece like this then comes out. Because, like, I actually would disassociate him from some of that, partly because of my experience, where when I played in Jordanstown under Mickey Moran, who was, like, the nicest man I've ever met, there are a lot of scumbags, like, and there's a lot of stuff going on the pitch that he had nothing to do with, like, you know, but yeah, you might have got your reputation of a team if we were a more famous team. This is the Jordanstown Freshers. Like, you know, that you might have had that sort of bully boy reputation, and then is Mickey Moore's name dragged into it? He had nothing to do with it. He just didn't say anything about it.
Yeah, well, he did. This is the thing. And, like, I mean, he said, the piece says Sean would never say, Joe Castle said in this, Sean would never say a bad thing about his players. So Joe Castle's in the film, he would defend them to the hilt regardless of what went on, or if people thought the team went over the top. See, they're admitting it themselves. Or if people thought the team went over the top. No, he would never. And Tommy says, this is not quite the compliment that Castle's perhaps thinks it is. Maybe Boylan shouldn't have defended him to the hilt. Maybe he should have drawn the line somewhere. And, like, the way I look at this is, this would be the message back in the 80s. They're going to take your head off. If you stand down from them and let them do it, well, then you're going to be beaten. They take your head off, you take their head off. You know what I mean? And this is, or else it would be told, you have to stand up for yourselves. And players can, you know, take their own meaning out of that. But I'd have no doubt managers would have said, you have to stand up for yourselves. And maybe Meath had 7 or 8 players that were more than happy to hear that message and give it back more than they got it. But what do? You can't come out and criticise one of your players for going over the top if the other team's going over the top on you, or else you're going to look soft. Do you know? So I don't know. It's definitely a difficult one to analyse. But again, I'll repeat, I thought it was a very good piece taken as an angle on it that I didn't see too much of, because especially I felt a little bit disappointed when I saw the documentary. Speaking of Joe Brawley, lads, his piece actually is all blacked out. I want my money back from the Sunday Independent, because half the page is just black. So I couldn't read it. He's talking about leaders and captains and stuff. But there's one piece in the right hand side that I thought was hilarious. And I just read it. And it's just, this is pure Joe Brawley. It's just Joe Brawley all over. So we need to, we talk about captains and leaders, etc., etc. And he talks about different sports and all these kind of things. And it's funnily enough, he brings in a couple of anecdotes about club football and club hurling in Derry, where lads are being beaten black and blue. And again, this is to prove the likes of Johnny McGurk and Henry Downey were brilliant leaders when they're beating their heads off. So, like, this lad, you couldn't make this fella up. Like, I mean, it's brilliant. And he says, we see the same thing in Stephen Cluxton. He dislikes the media and personal attention. It's a bullshit-free zone, trains harder than his teammates, shies away from speeches and leads only by example. Their breakthrough win in 2011, when he nailed the winning free, he went straight into the changing room and sat alone as the team did their victory laps. The following morning, he was back in school teaching. Well, I can confirm that the following morning, Stephen Cluxton was in a well-known pub. Well-known pub on, what's the name of that street? I don't even want to say the pub. Anyway, it was a very early morning session with the Dublin players celebrating their first All-Ireland since 1955. And Stephen Cluxton was with them. So that's not true in any shape or form. So, like, I mean, I think that needs to be confirmed. And I wouldn't think any less, I would have thought less of Stephen Cluxton to be back in work the next morning after that. Not a great leader.
Was the pub in Capel Street, Willie, by any chance?
Capel Street, that was it. Capel Street, well-known pub in Capel Street. Yeah, that's where they were that morning. Yeah, yeah. So fair play to them for doing that. There's another good piece in the Sunday Inder. We don't have time to get into it now, lads. It's about... it's Dermot Crowe writes a good piece, and it's a very long piece, and the headline is "Whistleblower Never Lost His Love of the Game." An incident in Wicklow involving referee Johnny Price got more attention than it probably deserved. Amazingly, Johnny Price was refereeing a game. It was an under-21B football final between Annacurra and Blessington, and after the match, Johnny Price went back to his car and he opened up his boot to change back into his clothes. And this is an old fable story from Wicklow. A lot of people say this happened in a Laois match between Laois and Wicklow in the championship in 86, when Wicklow, the Battle of Ockram, and Cartage Buckley was put into a boot of a car. That never happened with Cartage Buckley. It actually did happen with Johnny Price, terribly. So he was changing, he lifted up the hatchback door of his boot and he was pushed into the boot and the boot closed on him. Like, I mean, absolutely unbelievable stuff. Says when Price, an experienced intercounter referee, reached his Fianna Uno van, he opened up the hatchback door and began changing out his gear. His youngest son David was seated in the front seat when he heard a loud noise, the sound of the car's rear door slamming shut. During the match, Price had sent off a player from Annacurra, and while he was changing afterwards, three men approached him and hurled verbal abuse before one forced him inside the car. Some say that because it was a hatchback rather than a conventional boot, the deed wasn't as distressing as it might have been portrayed. The door was already open, but it was still a serious assault. It was actually two fellas, the county vice chairman Liam O'Loughlin and Baltinglass secretary Seamus Kelly, rescued him from his car. He was 44 at the time. Like, I mean, absolutely horrific stuff. Then talks to David Price, which is Johnny's son, about the incident, and talks to some other referees as well. We don't have time to get into it. It's so long, lads. It's worth reading, though, Conan.
It's brilliant. Scary stuff as well. And actually just made me depressed, you think. Not to that extreme, but... You know, the referee and some officials were under pressure being pushed, and a steward got hit actually at the Derry final last year. You know, this is 2019, and that's going way back when. But that story is obviously like the very worst example of it all.
Yeah, exactly. So gone to the Sunday Times then, lads. Michael Foley has two pieces in it. One is about the finances of county boards, and we kind of covered that last Thursday, so I'm not going to get into that. Oh yeah, actually one part of it I thought was interesting. So the headline of this is GA facing bleak future as financial implications of limits laid bare. The subtitle then is, after hopes of crowds easing are dashed, the association is left with a gaping black hole. So he is talking to Kerry treasurer Tom Keane, or this is from the Irish Examiner last Wednesday. Kerry treasurer says you'll also have team expenses that you wouldn't have. He's talking about next year, how they're going to manage. You'd also have team expenses you wouldn't have in previous years, such as three team buses for an away game as opposed to the usual one because of social distancing requirements, or extra hotel rooms to ensure one player per room as opposed to two per room. Never thought about this, Conan, not even once. There is no chance clubs in an away game, they won't have away games. Well, they would have away games within the counties. They must be all driving just individually in cars then. But I suppose an inter-county team, you know, going for a league game, Dublin against Kerry, Dublin will have to order three planes now, three charter flights, right? Instead of three buses.
Well, that'll be okay for Dublin and everybody else. That's the problem. I was actually thinking about this because we were talking with Wes Meave on Wednesday that we're talking about, like, they might not be able to compete next year at county level. And actually, it would make a lot of sense for the GAA to really shorten next season's fixtures, like not for a club thing, not as any part of a big master plan, but just so people can pick up from where they left off, really. So they've budgeted for this year and they're playing less games this year. Can they do that next year then? Just fill in whatever they have left over from 2019, and then they can maybe start making money again from the club championships in 2021 and be ready to go in 2022. Because, like, I didn't even think of that. Like, it's expensive enough to run teams, but to start doing it under the new regulations and stuff, it's going to be carnage.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. So he has another piece then, and it says the headline is "When the Music Stops." More must be done to help players struggling to come to terms with the early retirement from the game. So he talks to Colin Begley, he talks to Colin O'Neill, he talks to Tony O'Gregan. And Colin Begley says in the piece, last year Begley helped organise the GPA's first transition programme for players retiring from inter-county Gaelic games, with thoughts about his own future floating around the back of his mind. When a dozen male and female players gathered for a weekend to tease out the issues, Begley fell in love with the group. So, like, they're talking, Colin Begley says then, he says, "Identity is a big one," says Begley. "What does a player recognise himself as? GA only? People who worked on that earlier in their careers had a smoother transition. People with different interests outside sport, if they have hobbies or family, something to throw their time back into. You see players so fully invested in playing and training that they have no passion the same as the sport after that. It could be career. Not for everyone. Not everyone is lucky enough to have something they like." So I suppose this transition program at the moment is talking not only to players that are finishing up, but they're also talking to players that are only starting out. And their advice is, the obvious advice, Connor, is to don't emotionally invest yourself 100% in this and let everything else slide. And I'm talking from my own experience. That's absolutely what I did. So I can completely understand players like that, because it's so important to you and it's so big. But, you know, somebody giving me some advice, you know, earlier on in my career, and saying, you know, it's not just something magic that's going to click when you finish. You'll be left kind of completely out on your own. You'll have nobody else to help you. You won't be the player you were, so nobody will care what you're doing. Like, that wasn't really pointed out to me at a young age. It's almost like when you retire, you'll still continue on to be a respected player for the county. You'll be completely forgotten and you'll be out on your own.
Yeah, I think that's really important that they're starting it early, as opposed to just kind of assisting the kind of retirements of some players. Like, look at Shane Dowling. Shane Dowling is 27 now. I know he's had his injury, so he might have known that it was coming, but like, that's going to be such a land for him, you know. You'd think that he'd probably have an inter-county career until he's 33 and 34. His whole life is kind of revolved around that, and then boom, it's over at 27. And, you know, and then Colm O'Neill mentioned the same thing, and I think he couldn't get over really that because his career was ended by injury as well, that it was just over and that was that. And it was something we talked about a few weeks ago, I think, with Kieran Sheehan, who worked in player welfare in the AFL, and he said that was basically his job was to provide players with kind of advice about throughout their career about what they're going to do when it's over. And there was a line in the piece, actually, it kind of sounds a little bit cheesy, and kind of you would have heard a lot of it during maybe the Jim Gavin era, but it's, you know, focused on the development of the person first and the player second. But yeah, it is important, man, like, because that means that, like, first of all, you're likely to play better if you've everything outside of GA sorted while you are playing. And then if you focus on your development as a person first, then your transition, you know, to post-GA career will be a lot easier when it's all over. But as you said, Willie, you'd know far better. And I'd say there's a lot more in your boat that just their GA career comes to an end and they don't know what to do with themselves. So hopefully a lot of people take advantage of this program that Colin Begley is talking about.
Yeah, and they do a lot of the personal development programs, and a lot of people think they're wishy-washy, but there's a lot of players taking advantage of them. The GPA was saying the amount of players that have taken part in them this year is 629 players were supported through the GPA development program in the first half of 2020. They're fairly big numbers, lads. And whatever critique you have about the GPA, I remember when I was in sixth year and I had a career guidance teacher who was a geography teacher, and it was just roped into doing this. He was no more career guidance now than, you know, I was. And he gave me no career guidance, none whatsoever. And so if players who are obviously distracted by Gaelic games and invest too much time in it, if the GPA are providing some sort of development program to help these fellas in what career they want to choose and help them have more focus in their lives other than GEA. I can't see why that's criticised, Conan.
No, I think it's actually a great thing. And I think that's probably the reason why, like, you know, I know the GPA come in for a lot of scrutiny and stuff, but a lot of the past players always have something good to say about them. And, like, not, I don't want to blow smoke up your arse, I never do, Willie, but, like, you're a good example of somebody who's, like, used football and prolonged your career that way. Do you know what I mean? Like, and there's probably not enough of that just yet. I know some people popped up in the Sunday game and stuff, but it's very fleeting. Like, you know, they come in and then they leave again, and there's not enough people. Maybe that's where the GPA can become a bit more valuable. Like, you know, can they look at sort of making a career or some part of a career, even if it's part-time or whatever, for these people and prolong their involvement in sport? Because they have so much to offer, not just in the media, but, like, you know, obviously with background teams and stuff like that. And something that frightened me a bit as well is Colin Begley, like, made a good point. He's like, you know, it would be nice if some county boards were able to, like, offer a gesture, like, even something as small as a video for players who are retiring. And it does scare me, you know, when people just retire and disappear. And as you say, they're forgotten about because they've probably gone downhill a bit since then, so people don't care as much. And it's just, like, it seems mad that all these players go and it's not really marked unless they make a statement. And then, of course, when they make a statement, we sort of make a bit of fun of it. But it should really be the county board who's celebrating their career and thanking them for their service.
Well, I think that's a great point. And it was the last point I was going to make about it. Which one point Tony O'Regan said the removal of all, this is players that retired, the removal of all the schedules and structures that shaped the player's life was liberating for some, but not for everybody. And you see, I'm on the kind of side that it was liberating for me, and I can't understand players that would be, you know, distraught when you finish, is like, get back to it or whatever. But there are players that struggle with it. And I think your point on Colin Begley is a great one, because one thing that did shock me is how irrelevant you are, even to put, like, I ended up being suspended from my club in Portlaoise when I got to an age where, like, you know, I was done. They didn't even allow me to play with the intermediates. Like, imagine that. Try and get that into your head after everything you did for the club. You know, you get to an age and you're just kind of, well, sure, look, let's focus on the younger lads now. Let him on. He's trouble now. And I was no different than I was the whole time I was playing. With Leash, you're just, it's like the idea from supporters would be, well, look, listen, it'd be more important now worry about the under-21s coming through. You know, they don't give it, they don't care less. And better players than me, much better players than me, were treated the same. And I think Begley's thing, like, imagine if the county board sent me a video of all my scores that they could easily source off RT or something, a little video that chap in Kilkenny makes. Like, wouldn't that be a lovely gesture and a little plaque and say thanks for all the memories or whatever? I wouldn't care if they never spoke to me again. It would at least say, Jesus, they appreciated what I did for them. Mm. But they don't do that. And, like, I mean, players are, it's a joke with a lot of players how you're forgotten about when you finish playing. By your club and by your county, and that is not right. It's definitely not right. And Colin Begley is 100% right on that one. That's it for the Irish Times, lads. The other one I wanted to talk about was Pat Spillane in the Sunday World. And Pat, the headline this one is "Egos and Agendas Must Be Set Aside." Tunnel vision of GPA and CPA reminds me of the challenges I faced when ambassador for rural Ireland. So he goes to town on the whole rural Ireland thing, actually, at the start. He says, I get a sense of deja vu every time I read a statement from either the GPA or the CPA. It brings me back to my days as a rural ambassador for the government. In my innocence, I assumed that everybody involved wanted the same outcome, the betterment of rural Ireland. How wrong I was. Now, you would have kind of thought he'd leave that, you know, comparison aside, but he continues on to talk about rural Ireland for maybe the next 200 or 300 words, lads, doesn't he? So I'm not going to get into that. And it's like, okay, we get the comparison you're making here, Pat. Don't be going to town on it. But then he gets into the GPA after a while. And this is the usual. The GPA, by the way, are in big trouble. There's no doubt about that with the structure of their finances. The GEA will be doing well to give them anything next year. The government will be doing well to give them anything next year because they're running a budget deficit and it's absolutely scary. So you could be looking at the GPA being down 79% of their funding. So something has to give. And one of the big criticisms I have of the GPA is the salaries. And that's what Pat talks about that. He says, in terms of salaries, 4 senior executives cost the organization 449. So he's confirming that it's 4. So while the remaining 6 staff members share 293 293,000. These are generous salaries by any standards. I have a bigger issue with their extensive list of player programs. At face value, it's a significant list with 19 programs listed, but it's a bit wishy-washy, to put it mildly. Like, what the hell is personal development coaching? Like, I think personal development coaching is like career guidance in school, Conan. Have you got that one? Am I right on that one, or why is that? I think that one's pretty obvious to me, is to get a program to try and have players to have more in their lives outside of Gaelic games.
Absolutely. And it's something that if it wasn't there, then we'd be complaining that something like that wasn't there for the players, you know, that we're turning them into robots and just expecting them to play. And that's a very important thing that they should have there. And it's an important service that's being offered. So like, I don't get what the problem would be with offering money for that.
Yeah, he criticises the Super 11s tournament, which is an absolute joke at a time when hurling is on life support in many of these counties. Completely agree with that. That's an absolute abomination of a tournament. Then he talks about, he says they've simply sat back and allowed the intercounty bandwagon to career out of control, which has resulted in his members being flogged unmercifully. There's an element of truth to that as well. I think they have. They haven't been strong enough on restructuring the championship at all. They have come out last Friday. They drafted a proposal and sent it to the GAA for consideration. They want to shorten the intercounty season. They want the intercounty season to run from February to the end of July, so 23 weeks. I wouldn't have any issues with that. They were on the GAA's fixture calendar review task force. They had representation on that. So you'd like to think that that would have been something they were pushing on that rather than release statements, you know, after the fact. Have they come down heavy on which one of the three proposals they're backing that could comfortably fit within those 23 weeks? Do you know what I mean? Like, you were on that committee and now they're releasing like a proposal to shorten the intercounty season when they were already on the committee that was tasked with changing the intercounty season. Conor, am I explaining this well enough? It doesn't seem that, to me, that just doesn't make sense.
No, not really. But not for the first time with Pat Spillane's column, I've just wondered what day in the week he's wrote it for the Sunday, because he goes on, he doesn't mention the shortened season, I think, at all in his column. Whereas that was the big news on Friday. Like, he talked about the, as you said, the salaries, as he called it, the wishy-washy kind of programs that they have to offer and stuff like that. And I was thinking, well, if this is the Sunday World, surely the most topical thing with the GPA was the proposal that they put forward. But I haven't looked into it in enough detail. Like, in theory, the idea of the shorter season, especially like now when you're talking about, I think the idea of a split season between club and county is becoming more appealing, because the club, you know, when everyone realizes what it's like when a club has all of their players available to them at the same time, there's no kind of there's no quarrel with the intercounty players. So the idea of it in theory sounds good to me, but that's it. Whether that means which side of the three proposals that are going towards the task force that the GPA are going to come down on, I don't know. But again, even the idea of getting excited about you know, a shortened season that would be appealing to possibly county players and club players, I was wary of getting my hopes up, because again, this has to go through a lot of procedure before it's going to be rubber stamped. So I'm not going to get my hopes up just yet.
Yeah, he also has a go at the CPA in it and criticizes. He says it's CPA off their heads. He probably has a bit of a point here as well. CPA saying that the GAA is in crisis when we're in the middle of a global pandemic. You know, that's definitely a point we've made on the show before. That's it for the Sunday World. The Sunday, or the Irish Mail on Sunday, has a piece, Michael Clifford, a whole new ball game. In his day job as a TD, Alan Dillon is fighting hard to make his voice heard. While on the pitch, he's playing by different rules. So it's a nice piece with Alan Dillon, who talks a little bit about politics and then a little bit about GAA at the end. And because we've gone so far over time, we won't be going into this. One of the little headlines in it is, going into Leinster House is like stepping out of Croker. And I was like, Jesus, well, I've never gone into Leinster House, but surely it couldn't be the same as that. And then I read the actual quote inside it, He said, every day is a privilege when you walk up onto the plinth and you enter Leinster House. It's a huge honour, and it's a bit like stepping out at Croke Park, that you're representing your own county, but you also know you have to roll up your sleeves. So, like, I mean, he's talking about the honour of representing Mayo in Croke Park and the honour of representing him in Leinster House. So, you know, I stopped getting annoyed then about that little small headline in the middle. But that's a good piece as well. So if anybody has a chance, maybe that goes up online or whatever, I'm not too sure. Right, lads, we've gone way over time. I'm going to leave it there. We will talk to you on Thursday. We'll be back again and we'll do a show as usual. So we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
Well, when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, 'cause I won't see you later, but not a lot of talk.